Sang Misham Vishalahitam Bunjito Dakya Drishtam Piban Nanjalina Tvapa. Chandiganam cha Sanghi sham vishalahitam Vanjito dakya yadrishtam Piben anjalina tvapa Nochishtam chandiganam cha Sami sham vishalahitam Bunjito dakya yadrishtam Pibandan jalinat vapa. Ladies. Nochishtam chandikanam cha Jalinat vapa misham vishalahitam. Ladies. Vanjito dakya yadrishtam. Nochishtam chandikanam cha Pibennam jalinat vapa misham vishalahitam. Ladies. Nochishtam chandikanam cha Nochishtam chandikanam cha Sami sham vishalahitam Jalinatvapaha Sami vishalahitam Manjito dakya yadrishtam Nochishtam chandikanam cha Pibendan jalinatvapaha Na Nat Uchishtam Leftover Chandikanam Food offered to the goddess Kali. Cha and Sa'amisham mixed with flesh. Vrishala ahritam brought by a sudra. Punjita must eat. Udakaya by a woman in her menstrual period. Drishtam seen. Pibetna must not drink. Anjalina by joining and cupping the two palms. Tu also. Apaha water. Translation: never eat leftover food. Never eat prasad offered to the goddess Kali, Durga. And do not eat anything contaminated by flesh or fish. Do not eat anything brought or touched by a shudra, nor anything seen by a woman in her menstrual period. Do not drink water by joining your palms. Purport: generally, the goddess Kali is offered food containing meat and fish, and therefore Kashyapa Muni strictly forbade his wife to take the remnants of such food. Actually, a Vaishnava is not allowed to take any food offered to the demigods. A Vaishnava is always fixed in accepting prasad offered to Lord Vishnu. Through all these instructions, Kashyapa Muni, in a negative way, instructed his wife Diti how to become a Vaishnavi. Okay, we'll read a few more verses. Text 50. After eating, you should not go out to the street without having washed your mouth, hands, and feet. You should not go out in the evening or with your hair loose, nor should you go out unless you are properly decorated with ornaments. You should not leave the house unless you are very grave and are sufficiently covered. Purport: Kashyapa Muni advised his wife not to go out onto the street unless she was well decorated and well dressed. He did not encourage the miniskirts that have now become fashionable. In Oriental civilization, when a woman goes out onto the street, she must be fully covered so that no man will recognize who she is. All these methods are to be accepted for purification. If one takes to Krishna consciousness, one is fully purified, and thus one remains always transcendental to the contamination of the material world. Text 51. You should not lie down without having washed both of your feet or without being purified, nor with wet feet, or with your head pointed west or north. You should not lie naked or with other women, or during the sunrise or sunset. 52. Well, the first three verses that I just read, they're the, I guess, the what you should not do. Kashyapa Muni is giving his wife a bunch of rules to follow so that she can ultimately get a son who can kill Indra. And if she follows all these rules perfectly, then she'll be awarded with the son who will kill Indra. So it started off yesterday with other do nots, like do not do anything that will cause harm to others, which is interesting because Kashyapa Muni, first he starts off the list of rules saying that you should not want to harm others, which means that you shouldn't have the desire to kill Indra. If you have that desire to kill Indra, then this whole thing won't work. And she's trying to get a son who can kill Indra. So even right from the beginning, he's kind of forming the whole the vow that she has to take in such a way that will ultimately be for her benefit. So then he gives more rules, what to do, you know, about what to wear, what to eat, who to associate with, how to go out, you know, how to lie down. Yeah, remember, I guess the rule is that you shouldn't, you know, in the ashram, one of the things we learned is that we should sleep with our heads pointed east. So I guess that's, if you're sleeping with your head pointed east, that helps you in your spiritual advancement. And whereas if you go to put your head to the west, it's really bad, so I hear. And then the north is also not so good. But the south is all right. South is, I guess, good for good health. So if you sleep with your head to the south, then you'll get better health. And if you sleep with the east, then you'll advance in spiritual life. It doesn't hurt to try it. Okay, so these are just a bunch of the negative rules that is within this vow. And then text 52 starts the positive rules. So we'll go on to, we'll just read one more text 52 today. Text 52, translation, putting on washed clothing, being always pure, and being adorned with turmeric, sandalwood pulp, and other auspicious items. Before breakfast, one should worship the cows, the brahmanas, the goddess of fortune, and the supreme personality of Godhead. Purport. If one is trained to honor and worship the cows and brahmanas, he is actually civilized. The worship of the Supreme Lord is recommended, and the Lord is very fond of the cows and brahmanas. Namo brahmanya devayo, devaya go brahmana hitaya cha. In other words, a civilization in which there is no respect for the cows and brahmanas is condemned. One cannot become spiritually advanced without acquiring the brahminical qualifications and giving protection to cows. Cow protection ensures sufficient food prepared with milk, which is needed for an advanced civilization. One should not pollute civilization by eating the flesh of cows. A civilization must do something progressive, and then it is an Aryan civilization. Instead of killing the cow to eat flesh, civilized men must prepare various milk products that will enhance the condition of society. If one follows the Brahminical culture, he will become competent in Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada often he talked about modern civilization and comparing it with the Vedic civilization. And one time he was kind of putting it very simply with his disciples, he said, you know, Vedic civilization means that the cows should be happy. They should be well cared for. They should give milk, and the milk should be used. You know, the brahmanas can offer the milk to Krishna and different things like that. And then he said, but in this modern civilization, the dog is protected and the cow is slaughtered. So we, you know, the dog is passing stool and urine and it's very unclean, but yet we consider the dog to be our best friend here in the mess, at least in America. Whereas the cow is totally pure, even if it is passing, you know, dung and urine, it's still totally pure. Plus it also gives milk. And, you know, and then we end up slaughtering the cow and protecting the dog. So Prabhupada pointed out, what kind of civilization is this? So I have a little presentation here. Can you just push the button on the projector? Part of the reason why I just made a presentation today is just because we got this new projector and I wanted to try it out. So it's nothing fancy, I just kind of wanted to put something together really quick and then see how it works, but it's not. So the purport talks about cow protection, how Krishna likes the cows. So I've been reading Navavrajamahima, and there's lots of nice pastimes with Krishna and the cows. So I thought I'd just kind of go through some things about how Krishna's, to show like how Krishna's very fond of the cows and the brahmanas. So one of the interesting things in Nandagram, where Krishna grew up in his adolescence, Nandagram was like a super, super opulent place. It was described that all the homes of the cowherd boys, they were more opulent and beautiful than all the homes of the demigods. So one of the reasons why that the homes of the cowherd boys were more opulent than the homes of the demigods in heaven was because that they equally worshipped the cows, the brahmanas, and the Supreme Lord. That was the reason why they either excel the opulence of the heavenly planets. So this just shows the importance of worshiping the cows and the brahmanas and the Supreme Lord. Okay, so... Oops. Okay. So it's interesting, because here we're talking about what the vow says that one should, you know, wake up in the morning, wear clean clothes, and then before breakfast they should worship the cows. So it's very interesting that the very first thing that Krishna does when he wakes up in the morning, he goes and sees the cows. So he wakes up around, I guess, at least when he's in Nandagram, around 6:30 in the morning, and before even bathing, he goes and sees the cows. And when he sees the cows, he looks forward to it, and he calls out very lovingly calls out all the names of the cows, you know, Ganga and Godavari and Kalindi, and then all the cows come, and then, you know, Krishna pets the cows and the cows lick Krishna, and it's a very nice greeting. And then he considers the cows and bulls to be his mother and father, so he greets them each morning with loving words, saying, "Oh mother, have you rested well? Oh father, are you happy?" So this is what Krishna does every morning. This just shows how much he cares for cows, is that he's asking them these loving words. So then he goes on to, you know, start milking the cows. When Krishna milks the cows, he has this like golden bucket that he uses. And, you know, he kind of squats down on his toes and starts milking the cows. He doesn't milk all of them because there's just so many cows, so he just takes a few of them, and then his friends milk the other cows. And the thing is, with Krishna and the cows are so much in love with Krishna that they don't even really need to milk the cows, because the cows by themselves, out of love and affection, they're already kind of giving their milk, and so much milk is coming that they don't even really need to to milk. But Krishna does it anyway to reciprocate with the cow's affection and love. So one summer morning when they're milking the cows, you know, sometimes they milk the cows in the barns and sometimes they milk the cows outside. So one particular morning, Krishna was milking the cows near the main road, and it just so happened that the gopis happened to also be walking on that road that particular morning. So, you know, the gopis kind of knew that Krishna was milking the cows, so they kind of, in the back of their mind, they were thinking, you know, maybe we'll get to see Krishna on her way. But they tried to act very cool and calm and natural, like Krishna wasn't even there. So they just kind of kept, you know, they were acting indifferent to the whole situation that Krishna was milking his cows in the morning. So then the gopis, Radharani and the gopis, they were coming down the road. Krishna was here milking the cows, and Radharani and the gopis were acting indifferently to Krishna. And then Krishna also was acting indifferently to gopis and Radharani as they were approaching. Because Krishna had his back to the road, and he was pretending to be focused on milking the cows. So he just was not really paying attention, so-called paying attention, and he was just acting naturally. But what was actually going on was that Krishna was very aware of the gopis that they were coming, and Radharani was very aware of Krishna. So Krishna was always seeing Radharani and the gopis in the corner of his eye, and Radharani was always kind of peeking at Krishna through her veil. So in this way, they were kind of approaching each other closer and closer. And then as they got closer, Radharani started to wonder, like, what? She had this suspicion that Krishna was up to something, you know, that he was going to do something. He just had this suspicion. And then as Radharani and the gopis approached Krishna closer and closer, the tension became more palatable, because everyone was in that group was wondering what was going to happen. And, you know, it's described that all the sounds in Vrindavan just kind of became quiet. And the only thing that can be heard was the you know, the squish, squish of Krishna milking the cows and the ankle bells of the gopis. Those are the only sounds. So then, you know, just like this, they're getting closer and closer and closer. And then right as Radharani and the gopis are passing Krishna on the road, Krishna just ends up squirting them with milk from the cow's udder. Well, he actually ends up squirting Radharani directly in the face. And why this is awesome is because Radharani was in the middle of the gopis, and somehow Krishna was able to aim it perfectly so that it only hit Radharani in the face. And so then, anyway, she shrieked, and all the gopis started, you know, squealing. And then Krishna just started kind of, you know, started squirting all the gopis, you know, taking like each two teats and just went got all of them, so then they all scattered. And so then now Radharani kind of is by herself now, because all the gopis started scattering. And then when Krishna got done, you know, Krishna then jumped up, because everybody was scattered. And then when Krishna jumped up, the cow kind of moved in such a way that the cow blocked all the other gopis from Radharani. So Radharani was kind of on one side of the cow, and all the other gopis were on the other side. So then Krishna took this opportunity of Radharani being alone and jumped up and then, you know, kind of kissed Radharani on the cheek. And, you know, because they were hidden from everybody else. So then eventually the cow ended up moving, and Lalita saw that, oh no, Radharani's under the control of Krishna. So then Lalita said, put your hands off of her, you scoundrel. And anyway, so then then Radharani's friends were going to try to, you know, save Radharani from Krishna. But then Krishna just very boldly, even in the plain sight of everybody, then he just planted one more kiss on Radharani, and then, you know, kind of went back to his cowherd boyfriends, who were kind of cheering him on the whole time. So these are some of the pastimes that Krishna does with the cows in the morning before he even starts his day. So then after the morning milking, then Krishna ends up taking the cows to the forest or out to the pastures to graze, and you know. So this is always like a very exciting, colorful, and emotional event, is when Krishna leaves, you know, his home in Nandagram and goes out to, you know, wherever they go that day. Wherever Krishna and the cowherd boys want to go, they go to different forests every day. And it's always a scene when all the cows are gathering, all the gopas are gathering, and they go out. It's, you know, it's described that the cows are in the front, and then as they're walking, the cows are always trying to, like, turn their head to look at Krishna behind them. And all the gopas really get into this, because then they, you know, they start singing and dancing and twirling sticks and blowing their bugle, their buffalo horns, and, you know, they try to show off to their relatives in very clever ways. And then, you know, sometimes they'll all grab the dhotis of the gopa in front of them, and then they'll make like a snake of gopas as they kind of slither away into the forest or something. So it's always a grand procession with the cows. And Krishna takes the cows to the forest. And then while they're in the forest, you know, Krishna has fun with the cows. You know, when the cows lie down, he also lies down. When the cows are running, he runs with the cows. But most of the time, the cows kind of just take care of themselves. So Krishna has a lot of free time that he uses to just have fun, I guess. You know, I remember Pritishrava Prabhu was telling me one time that, you know, Krishna's thinking that oh, my mother and that my father, they, you know, that they think that I'm hard at work, you know, herding the cows during the day. But really, they don't know that I just play all day. The cows just take care of themselves. So, you know, they have many sporting pastimes with his friends during this time, and so many things go on. So then, after they're done herding for the day, then Krishna brings all the cows back to Nandagram. So, but before entering Nandagram, he kind of tries to gather all the cows in a forest nearby Nandagram before actually entering to make sure they got all the cows. So Krishna plays his Murali flute and tries to, you know, just through his flute, he's able to direct the cows and separate them into different groups. And so then he might climb a tree, like, and he might, you know, go on the branch of a bent kadamba tree, and he'll survey all the cows, and he'll count all of them to make sure that they're all there. And there's a lot of cows. And then if there's any one particular cow missing, you know, he'll call that cow through his flute, and then that cow will come and join their particular group. There's so many different varieties of cows, colors, different sized horns, and different things, and they're all in different groups. And Krishna loves them all equally. So then once all the cows are in their groups and they're all counted, everybody's accounted for, then they start proceeding to Nandagram. In a similar fashion, the way they left, they kind of come back, and it's always an exciting time. So before they actually reach Nandagram, Nanda Maharaj, he's at Nandagram, and he's always waiting, very, very anxious for Krishna to, you know, when will Krishna return? So what Nanda Maharaj does during the day when Krishna's out herding the cows, he's a cowherd king. So he does his, you know, I guess more or less business of running the cowherd kingdom. And he has this throne that he sits on. And what he does is that he directs all the other gopas to line up all these, like, churns of milk, all these, you know, pots of milk into rows. And then he just sits there and he counts them all, you know, kind of like Kuvera does with all the wealth of the treasury of the demigods. So that's what Nanda Maharaj does too. He counts all the churns of milk. And he also has a secretary there who's also kind of keeping track of how much milk they have, you know. So then, but while Nanda Maharaj is doing all of his duties or whatever, he's always thinking about when will Krishna return. So he's always like looking down the road to see when he'll see like the raised dust from the calves, you know, and the cows and Krishna, and when will he hear Krishna's flute. And and like that. And when actually Krishna does start to come, whenever he gets like the first hint that Krishna is coming, he becomes confused and he loses count of all the milk that's being brought before him, and he just kind of gets into this like ecstatic love, and he totally forgets about all of these other things. And then his secretary has to remind him, "Oh, king, you know that the count is actually this. It's not whatever you're saying." So then, that's what's going on at home when Krishna's away. So then, when Krishna comes back to Nandagram, all the cows, their udders are full, and they're ready to be milked for their evening milking or late afternoon milking. So. And even though Krishna's been away all day, you know, hard at work, herding the cows, he's still very eager to milk the cows again in the evening. He milked them in the morning, he played with them all day, and then in the evening he still wants to milk the cows. So much so that, you know, Nanda Maharaj, he has to tell his son Krishna, you know, "Krishna, you've been hard at work all day. I think you should, you know, take a little rest, have your mother bathe you. And then after, you know, you kind of relax a little bit, then you can come and you can help milk the cows." So then Krishna does that, and he comes back and milks the cows. So you know, again, just like the morning, sometimes they milk the cows in the barn or the corrals, and sometimes they milk the cows outside. And, you know, it's always nice for everybody in Vrindavan when Krishna milks the cows outside, because then everybody can see Krishna milking the cows. So when Radharani hears that Krishna is milking the cows outside, she goes to this place called Pavana Sarovara. It's apparent, I guess it's somewhere near Varshana and Nandagram, and it's a place where there's this watchtower there, and she normally goes to this place to fetch water and bathe or whatever. So she uses that excuse of, "I'm going to go fetch water and bathe," but really she wants to go up this watchtower and kind of look at Krishna from afar while he's milking the cows. Because Radharani's father, Rishabhanu, he built this watchtower for Radharani so that she could change when she's bathing. And it's also, this watchtower also serves as like a place where Radharani can keep all of her cooking paraphernalia for when she cooks for Krishna. So it's kind of like her little outpost, kind of out, right outside an underground. So sometimes when Radharani is kind of watching Krishna milk the cows, she's with her friends, and when she sees Krishna milking the cows, sometimes she realizes, she becomes a little ashamed that she's spying on Krishna and her friends are present. So she kind of becomes ashamed and she lowers her head and she loses sight of Krishna. And Radharani's friends are very good. They immediately, you know, kinda know that, "Oh, Radharani's not looking at Krishna anymore." So then Vishakha jumps in and she says, you know, "Oh, just see," you know, then she starts describing what Krishna is doing. So even though Radharani's not looking at Krishna because her head is down because of being ashamed, Vishakha jumps in and starts describing what Krishna is doing while he's milking the cows. So she describes how, you know, when he starts milking the cows, he calls all the cows by name, and then they start lovingly approach him, and you know, they're all the cows are kind of jumping over each other to try to get to Krishna because they all want to get milked by Krishna. And then she starts describing how Krishna milks the cows. So first he squirts a little bit of the milk on Mother Earth as kind of like a worship to Mother Earth. A few squirts on the earth. And then Krishna squirts his hand with milk to kind of moisten his hand with milk, and also moistens the udders with milk. And then he expertly starts to milk the cows. And it's described that, she was describing that as the milk was filling in his golden bucket, the inside the pot, it looked like the moon rising from the milk ocean, because there's a reflection of Krishna's face in the pot. And it was and she kept describing how Krishna was milking the cows, how he kind of leaned his head against the cows as he was milking, and the turban kind of that Krishna was wearing kind of tilted to the side, and some of his hair fell in front of his face, which was very beautiful. And you know, normally Krishna has very restless eyes. He's always looking here and there, and you know, doing so many things with his eyes. But when he's milking the cows, his eyes are fixed, and he's very focused on milking the cows, even despite all of his rowdy cowherd friends saying, you know, come here, take them, hurry up, you know, all these like these chants from the cowherd boys and all the cows everywhere. He's still like super fixed into what he's doing, milking the cows. So then, while this description is going on, Krishna kind of gets news from his friends that he's being spied on by Radharani and the gopis. So then he kind of sneaks away and goes to where Radharani is and meets them. But so that's Krishna interacting with the cows in the evening. So you can see morning, first thing he wakes up, all throughout the day when they come home, he's with the cows and he loves the cows. He has great affection for the cows. So it's very clear that Krishna likes the cows, but it's also described that Radharani also really loves cows. She's also feminine aspect, or she's the feminine aspect of the Absolute Truth. So she's also the Supreme. And she also loves cows. So just as Krishna's the son of a cowherd king, so Radharani, she's also the daughter of another cowherd king. And oftentimes, you know, she sees the cows being milked almost every day, and sometimes she herself also milks the cows. And so one time, one of these times when Radharani was milking the cows, Krishna came and saw Radharani milking the cows, and Krishna started, you know, to kind of joke with Radharani and said, you know, you call yourself to be the daughter of a cowherd king and you don't even know how to milk cows properly? And Radharani was like, what do you mean? If you know how to milk cows better, come and show me. So then Krishna pulls up a stool and sits next to Radharani and starts to show her how to milk the cows. So then he said, okay, now watch what I do, and then you can follow what I do. So then Krishna starts to milk the cows, and Radharani was watching very closely to see what Krishna was doing, how he milked the cows. And then after some time, Radharani's like, what? I'm wondering what's different between what he does and what I do. It seems like it's the same. So then just as Radharani was about to kind of tell Krishna, like, hey, what's going on? You're just doing the same exact thing that I was doing. So then right as she was about to say that, Krishna then squirted her with milk again. And then Radharani got all flabbergasted. And she was about ready to just start, you know, getting angry and reprimand Krishna for doing this. But then she saw his sweet smile and everything, and then she kind of just looked at him shyly, and that was the pastime. But and there's another pastime with Radharani and cows. There was this one calf who was eating some very sharp straw, and that calf's mouth or something was bleeding, and she felt really great compassion for this calf who was bleeding, and she started to cry and feel really like she really wanted to help this calf. So then immediately she took some of her kumkum powder and kind of applied it to the wound of the calf, and you know, the calf got better. So anyway, so like that, there's Radharani action. We can, in the Bhagavatam, there's a verse that Krishna says that I can be worshipped within the cows by offerings of grass and other suitable grains. And if cows are maintained nicely, you know, that they do this in a lot of our the cows, and not necessary to actually go all out cows. So anything anybody would like to add? Krishna, not people.
Usually we have a cow protection in ISKCON, and there are some cows in ISKCON, and I was just wondering if, for example, let's imagine we have some farms, you know, and we have some cows there. let's say we have 1% of all the cows in the world, or 5%, what will happen with the other 95% of cows who are being slaughtered? Do you have any thoughts of that? Can we help them, or just...
Well, we help, we try to help. It's not like we're going to go and protest the slaughterhouses, you know, like picket outside the slaughterhouse and saying stop the slaughter of animal innocent cows and like that. We might, but the way that Prabhupada recommended, the way that we generally go about doing things, is the way we go about trying to make changes in the world is we try to change people's consciousness. That's kind of like our methodology for the... I mean, one, we should ourselves be engaged in protecting the cows, supporting the protection of cows, drinking ahimsa milk, not supporting the slaughterhouse industry if we don't have to, you know, by buying milk that's... Anyway. So that's how what we should do to kind of protect cows. But then, you know, ultimately, Prabhupada was wanting us to educate people about the value of cow protection and try to purify their consciousness through chanting, through Harinam Sankirtan, so that they'll be able to understand, you know, spiritual things. And then they'll naturally not want to engage in killing cows. So that's, you know, we could, I mean, I know in Vrindavan, there's this article in this Back to Godhead magazine where they're, I guess there's this whole Goshala there where they're taking a lot of the rejected cows in Vrindavan and who are like hit in an accident or malnourished or whatever, and they bring them to their place, and then they like kind of bring them back to health. They feed them nicely. They take care of their wounds. They give them water baths and massages, and it's a very nice program that they have in Vrindavan and similarly other places around the world where they're actually taking care of the cows. So through this, we're trying to teach civilization how, you know, educate society on how to, the value of cow protection and that they should actually take it up, you know, for their own benefit and for the benefit of society. Otherwise, what kind of civilization do we have where we're slaughtering so many cows every day? It's really difficult. You have something else?
Yes, thanks for class.
Krishnanam has a follow-up thing. Can I just...
How are we going to educate them? If we want to educate them, we have to make them Vaishnavas. Otherwise, if you tell them, you know, be a Christian, be a good Christian, be a good Muslim, they will say, okay, it's okay. I will slaughter many cows now because my God wants to do this. This is your religion, this is your God. How are we going to educate them?
I mean, Prabhupada, he talked to Christians, and he often talked to, you know, Prabhupada, when he talked to Christians, he always said, your religion says that you should not kill, but why are you killing so many animals? And he often, and when he was talking with that cardinal, you know, he was describing how the cow is actually our mother. She gives us milk. And why, when the cow gets old, when your mother gets old, you don't kill your mother. So even just basic, like, human moral arguments you can use to try to convince people not to kill cows. That was a big part of Prabhupada's preaching when he came to America, was this point about trying to, you know, don't kill the cows, you know, whatever you do. I mean, even if you have to eat meat, then, you know, have chickens or something, but don't kill the cows, because they're our mother, and you don't kill the cows. You don't kill your mother when she can't produce milk anymore. So like that, you can try to convince. And there's also just, if you look at, there's other arguments that you can look at. I was just reading this ISKCALP news thing, and, you know, they have articles where they compare the use of oxen versus the use of tractors and the pros and cons of each. And from an environmental perspective, the oxen are way better for the environment. And they're way more efficient, and if you look at it in a particular perspective, they're actually more cost effective. You know, they're much cheaper, and they don't require so much factory and use of petroleum and all these other things which are unsustainable. So you can put from a sustainability argument, you can say that cows and bulls are important for the, you know, for the Mother Earth, for the thriving of society. Certainly from an environmental perspective, you know, we just watched this cowspiracy video where the effect that the slaughterhouse industry has on the planet is just totally detrimental. It's like the leading cause for greenhouse gas emissions and deforestation and pollution of our oceans and everything. So like there's a lot of environmental arguments that you can use to support the not killing cows that anybody would accept, whether you're Hare Krishna or not. Of course, we want to also educate them that another reason why we do it is because Krishna likes cows and Krishna is pleased when we take care of cows. So that's the spiritual reason why we do it. But you know, at least trying to bring people up to the human platforms so that they can maybe understand spiritual things in the future, that we can also help in that area too. You have something, Steve?
Okay, there's a couple of statements in the purport that Prabhupada makes. One of them is, one cannot become spiritually advanced without acquiring the brahminical qualifications and giving protection to cows. And then the last statement in the purport is, if one follows the brahminical culture, he will become competent in Krishna consciousness. So my question is, why is brahminical culture so important for spiritual advancement in Krishna consciousness, or what is it about brahminical culture that makes it so important for Krishna consciousness?
Well, first, Krishna really likes brahmanas. You know, in the verse that's also quoted there, namo brahmanya deva yogo brahmana tayacha. You know, we offer that whenever we make an offering, this is what we chant, this particular shloka, where Krishna really likes the brahmanas and the cows. And a lot of times Krishna accepts things through the brahmanas. So if you offer something to the brahmanas, that's very pleasing to Krishna, and that's how you can advance in Krishna consciousness, by pleasing the brahmanas. And then the brahmanas will take whatever you offer to them, and then they'll be the ones that offer it to Krishna. Like sometimes when people come and they want to donate something to the temple, you know, that it's, you know, a lot of, sometimes people have the idea that they want to donate, like, I want to donate money to buy a new belt for Krishna, or a new dress for Krishna, Radha and Krishna, or something very specific they want to use their money to buy for a particular thing. But the way the Vedic civilization works is that the people in general, they just donate to the brahmanas. That's their service. Their service is just to donate the money or whatever to the brahmanas, and then it's up to the brahmanas who should be the brains of society and you know, engaged in worshiping Krishna, who should actually know how best to utilize that money. So it's the brahmanas' service to accept charity and then to give it, whereas for the people in general, their service is just to give to the brahmanas, because they'll know how to use it properly. So, and, you know, the brahminical culture is, you know, kind of like the culture we're trying to cultivate here in the temple, you know, of cleanliness and truthfulness, punctuality, and, you know, so many lists of brahminical qualities that are favorable for one practicing Krishna consciousness, rising early. It's very difficult to practice Krishna consciousness if you're lying all the time, if you're untruthful, if you're unregulated, and you're not on time for anything. You know, it's like it's your mind will become very disturbed by so many things. In fact, that's one of the, and this is kind of a tangential point, but one of the things that's, you know, in these list of rules that Kashyapa Muni is giving Diti, it's all these rules are and rituals and things in general, like this kind of stuff, they're meant to give form to one's practice. And once a form is given to one's practice, it helps make the mind peaceful. Generally, if one is very like on the emotional platform and the mind is all over the place, if one has like a ritual that they can, a bunch of rules of do's and don'ts and proper ways of behavior, it makes the mind peaceful so that they can actually end up taking to Krishna consciousness, thinking of Krishna more, becoming absorbed in Krishna more. Whereas if they're not regulated, they don't have any rules, and they're just kind of doing whatever they want, then their mind's just going to be totally disturbed and they're not going to be able to think of Krishna as easily. Of course, when you're on the spontaneous platform, then you don't need all these rules and stuff. You can just spontaneously think of Krishna, but most of us were not there. So a lot of us require these rituals and things. So we are encouraged to come to develop Brahminical culture, to develop Brahminical qualities, and that will help us. Okay?
Thank you. I'll just add one thing. You were mentioning how some members of society, you know, their service or their means of spiritual advancement may just be, you know, feeding the brahmanas or supporting the brahmanas. It's interesting because Prabhupada says one cannot become spiritually advanced without acquiring the Brahminical qualifications. So it sounds like even for those who are not technically fulfilling the occupation of a brahmana, one is you're supposed to cultivate those qualities in your life. Can you talk about that?
Prabhupada said that, you know, Vaishnava is better than brahmana. So if you're a Vaishnava, that pretty much includes whatever the brahmanas have and more. So we're all encouraged in our society to become Vaishnavas. Not all of us will become brahmanas in the sense of worshipping Krishna on the altar or dressing the deities or something like that. That's nice that, you know, if we can, we encourage devotees to do that. But we should all become qualified. You know, we're all trying to become Brahminically qualified. Okay. Anything else? Anybody would like to add?
Probe it a little further that the Prabhupada does emphasize over and over again that one must acquire the Brahminical qualifications to become Krishna conscious. At least it seems that way. One has to get free from the lower modes of nature, come to the mode of goodness. Once one is situated in goodness, then they can access transcendence. So how do we understand that also with the point that it's not required to adopt the perhaps activities? Because in one sense, even people whose nature may be Vaishya or Kshatriya or Shudra, in ISKCON, our society operates as a Brahminical culture, that even if they have a different working nature, mostly engaged in Brahminical activities, as far as helping ISKCON develop, perhaps.
I mean, we should all have Brahminical qualifications, or like we're trying to develop those, but not that doesn't mean that we're all going to be only Brahmanas. That's why Prabhupada was preaching so heavily, especially, you know, closer to him leaving the planet, about the need for these farm communities, was so that we can engage all people according to their nature and, you know, their different occupational duties. But it is true that Prabhupada did say that ISKCON's meant to be like the head of society, that we're supposed to train up brahmanas. That's true, but Prabhupada's vision of ISKCON was a little, I guess, broader than just that. But he was also thinking about, you know, the whole society, trying to create Daivivarna Ashram, and which means everybody's Vaishnav, but they might perform the function of different things, different duties, you know, farming, doing this, whatever. Art, you know, artistry, music, whatever. Doesn't mean like, you know, in order to be in ISKCON, you either you're a brahmana on the altar worshiping, or you're engaged in teaching, or you're not in ISKCON. I don't think that's what Prabhupada meant when he was saying that we're meant to train up people to become brahmanas and be the heads of society. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, of course not. And it makes sense in the fact that the Vaishnav, he's already Brahmin. So he's doing a different activity, he's a qualified Brahmin in that sense.
Right. So if you're a Vaishnav, even if you might have like the nature to be a brahmana or something, you might even do the activities of something else, because because you're only doing it for the pleasure of Krishna. Of course, generally for most people, they need to be engaged according to their nature for them to be peaceful. But you know, if you're Vaishnav, then you might not even, you might be able to, you know, thrive without doing anything, as long as it's whatever for the pleasure of Krishna. So, I don't know. I don't have any, I don't know if I have more things to say. Something else? Okay.
The update you want to share on ISKCON Chicago's progress in cow protection?
Well, we were trying to get milk from Gita Nagari, like Ahimsa milk, and then, but we haven't heard back from Dhruva Prabhu on anything. I tried to contact him many times, but it seems like he's busy or somewhere else. So that's a question mark to see when we'll get him some milk, if we'll get it. Anyway, Patruk, he's also trying to start like a little farm project, you know, on the outskirts of Chicago somewhere, and he said he could probably also, he's going to have cows and everything, and he'd be happy to provide milk to the temple, you know, by the end of the year or something. So who knows if that'll happen. And then just from like a, you know, it's just such a like a big, huge project that it's, you know, it's, I know Don Achille just wrote this really nice paper called Community by Design. So as far as the tax structure of such a rural community, that is a good argument to see which tax structure that the rural community should have. So that's their tax structure and different outlets for getting ahimsa milk here in the temple. And then just kind of building up, just slowly talking to people about the idea of having like a rural project. Talking with different devotees, brewing up interest. That's kind of where it's at right now. We're definitely not in the planning phase. We're more in the trying to develop a vision phase, and that's going to take a while.
Thank you for your service in this regard.
Okay, anything else? We'll end here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.